first king born of the earth. I am the one who judged the dispute between Athena and Poseidon, and chose Athena to be the patron of the city.
No hard feelings, though, Percy muttered. Annabeth elbowed him. I've heard of you, Kecrops. You were the first to offer sacrifices to Athena. You built her first shrine on the Acropolis.
Correct.
Kecrops sounded bitter, like he regretted his decision.
My people were the original Athenians, the Gemini.
Like your zodiac sign? Percy asked. I'm a Leo. No, stupid, Leo said. I'm a Leo. You're a Percy.
Will you two stop it?
Hazel chided.
I think he means Gemini, like doubled. Half man, half snake. That's what his people are called. He's a Geminis. Singular.
Yes.
Kecrops leaned away from Hazel, as if she somehow offended him.
Millennia ago, we were driven underground by the two-legged humans. But I know the ways of the city better than any. I came to warn you. If you try to approach the Acropolis above ground, you will be destroyed.
Jason stopped nibbling his cake. You mean, by you?
By Porphyrion's armies, said the Snake King. The Acropolis is ringed with great siege weapons. Onagers.
More onagers? Frank protested. Do they have a sail on them or something?
The Cyclopes, Hazel guessed. They're supplying both Octavian and the Giants. Percy grunted. Like we needed more proof that Octavian is on the wrong side.
That is not the only threat, Kecrops warned. The air is filled with storm spirits and griffins. All roads to the Acropolis are patrolled by the Earthborn.
Frank drummed his fingers on the bundt cake cover.
So what? We should just give up? We've come too far for that.
I offer you an alternative, said Kecrops. Underground passage to the Acropolis. For the sake of Athena, for the sake of the gods, I will help you.
The back of Piper's neck tingled. She remembered what the giantess Periboea had said in her dream, that the demigods would find friends in Athens as well as enemies. Perhaps the giantess had meant Kecrops and his snake people. But there was something in Kecrops's voice that Piper didn't like. That razor against strop tone, as if he was preparing to make a sharp cut. What's the catch? She asked. Kecrops turned those inscrutable dark eyes on her.
Only a small party of demigods, no more than three, could pass undetected by the giants. Otherwise, your scent would give you away. But our underground passages could lead you straight into the ruins of the Acropolis. Once there, you could disable the siege weapons by stealth and allow the rest of your crew to approach. With luck, you could take the giants by surprise. You might be able to disrupt their ceremony.
Ceremony? Leo asked. Oh, like to wake Gia.
Even now it has begun, Kecrops warned. Can you not feel the earth trembling? We, the Gemini, are your best chance.
Piper heard eagerness in his voice, almost hunger. Percy looked around the table. Any objections? Just a few, Jason said. We're on the enemy's doorstep. We're being asked to split up. Isn't that how people get killed in horror movies? Also, Percy said, Gia wants us to reach the Parthenon. She wants our blood to water the stones and all that other psycho garbage.
Won't we be playing right into her hands?
Annabeth caught Piper's eye. She asked a silent question.
What's your feeling?
Piper still wasn't used to that, the way Annabeth looked to her for advice now. Ever since Sparta, they'd learned that they could tackle problems together from two different sides. Annabeth saw the logical thing, the tactical move. Piper had gut reactions that were anything but logical. Together, they either solved the problem twice as fast, or they hopelessly confused each other. Keycrops's offer made sense. At least, it sounded like the least suicidal option. But Piper was certain the Snake King was hiding his true intentions. She just didn't know how to prove it. Then she remembered something her father had told her years ago. You were named Piper because Grandpa Tom thought you would have a powerful voice. You would learn all the Cherokee songs, even the Song of the Snakes. A myth from a totally different culture, yet here she was, facing the king of the snake people. She began to sing Summertime, one of her dad's favorites. Keycrops stared at her in wonder. He began to sway. At first, Piper was self-conscious, singing in front of all her friends and the snake guy. Her dad had always told her she had a good voice, but she didn't like to draw attention to herself. She didn't even like to participate at campfire sing-alongs. Now, her words filled the mess hall. Everyone listened, transfixed. She finished the first verse. No one spoke for a count of five. Pipes, Jason said. I had no idea. That was beautiful, Leo agreed. Maybe not, you know, Calypso beautiful, but still. Piper kept the Snake King's gaze. What are your real intentions?
To deceive you, he said in a trance, still swaying. We hope to lead you into the tunnels and destroy you.
Why?
Piper asked.
The Earth Mother has promised us great rewards. If we spill your blood under the Parthenon, that will be sufficient to complete our awakening.
But you serve Athena, Piper said. You founded her city.
Keycrops made a low hiss.
And in return, the goddess abandoned me. Athena replaced me with a two-legged human king. She drove my daughters mad. They leaped to their deaths from the cliffs of the Acropolis. The original Athenians, the Gemini, were driven underground and forgotten. Athena, the goddess of wisdom, turned her back on us. But wisdom comes from the earth as well. We are, first and last, the children of Gaia. The Earth Mother has promised us a place in the sun of the upper world.
Gaia is lying, Piper said. She intends to destroy the upper world, not give it to anyone.
Keycrops bared his fangs.
Then we will be no worse off than we were under the treacherous gods.
He raised his staff, but Piper launched into another verse of Summertime. The Snake King's arms went limp. His eyes glassed over. Piper sang a few more lines. Then she risked another question.
The giant's defenses, the underground passage to the Acropolis. How much of what you told us is true?
All of it, Keycrops said. The Acropolis is heavily defended, just as I described. Any approach above ground would be impossible.
So you could guide us through your tunnels, Piper said. That's also true?
Keycrops frowned.
Yes.
And if you ordered your people not to attack us, she said, they would obey?
Yes, but,
Hecrops shuddered.
Yes, they would obey. Three of you at most could go without attracting the attention of the giants.
Annabeth's eyes darkened.
Piper, we'd be crazy to try it. He'll kill us at the first opportunity.
Yes, the Snake King agreed. Only this girl's music controls me. I hate it. Please, sing some more.
Piper gave him another verse. Leo got into the act. He picked up a couple of spoons and made them do high kicks on the tabletop until Hazel slapped his arm.
I should go, Hazel said, if it's underground.
Never, Hecrops said. A child of the underworld? My people would find your presence revolting. No charming music would keep them from slaying you.
Hazel swallowed. Or I could stay here.
Me and Percy, Annabeth suggested.
Percy raised his hand. Just gonna throw this out here again. That's exactly what Gia wants. You and me. Our blood watering the stones, etc.
I know.
Annabeth's expression was grim.
But it's the most logical choice. The oldest shrines on the Acropolis are dedicated to Poseidon and Athena. Hecrops, wouldn't that mask our approach?
Yes, the Snake King admitted. Your scent would be difficult to discern. The ruins always radiate the power of those two gods.
And me, Piper said at the end of her song. You'll need me to keep our friend here in line. Jason squeezed her hand. I still hate the idea of splitting up.
But it's our best shot, Frank said. The three of them sneak in and disable the onagers, cause a distraction. Then the rest of us fly in with ballistae blazing.
Yes, Hecrops said. That plan could work, if I do not kill you first.
I've got an idea, Annabeth said. Frank, Hazel, Leo, let's talk. Piper, can you keep our friend musically incapacitated?
Piper started a different song. Happy Trails, a silly tune her dad used to sing to her whenever they left Oklahoma to return to L.A. Annabeth, Leo, Frank, and Hazel left to talk strategy. Well? Percy rose and offered his hand to Jason.
Until we meet again at the Acropolis, bro. I'll be the one killing giants.
Chapter 42. Piper. Piper's dad used to say that being in the airport didn't count as visiting a city. Piper felt the same way about sewers. From the port to the Acropolis, she didn't see anything of Athens except dark, putrid tunnels. The snake men led them through an iron storm grate at the docks, straight into their underground lair, which smelled of rotting fish, mold, and snakeskin. The atmosphere made it hard to sing about summertime and cotton and easy living, but Piper kept it up. If she stopped for longer than a minute or two, Hecrops and his guards started hissing and looking angry.
I don't like this place, Annabeth murmured. Reminds me of when I was underneath Rome.
Hecrops hissed with laughter.
Our domain is much older. Much, much older.
Annabeth slipped her hand into Percy's, which made Piper feel downhearted. She wished Jason were with her. Heck, she'd even settle for Leo. Though maybe she wouldn't have held his hand. Leo's hands tended to burst into flames when he was nervous. Piper's voice echoed through the tunnels. As they traveled farther into the lair, more snake people gathered to hear her. Soon, they had a procession following behind them, dozens of Gemini all swaying and slithering. Piper had lived up to her granddad's prediction. She had learned the Song of the Snakes, which turned out to be a George Gershwin number from 1935. So far, she had even kept the Snake King from biting, just like in the old Cherokee story. The only problem with that legend? The warrior who learned the snake song had to sacrifice his wife for the power. Piper didn't want to sacrifice anyone. The vial of physician's cure was still wrapped in its chamois cloth, tucked in her belt pouch. She hadn't had time to consult with Jason and Leo before she left. She just had to hope they would all be reunited on the hilltop before anyone needed the cure. If one of them died and she couldn't reach them... "Just keep singing," she told herself. They passed through crude stone chambers littered with bones. They climbed slopes so steep and slippery it was nearly impossible to keep their footing. At one point, they passed a warm cave the size of a gymnasium filled with snake eggs, their tops covered with a layer of silver filaments, like slimy Christmas tinsel. More and more snake people joined their procession. Slithering behind her, they sounded like an army of football players shuffling with sandpaper on their cleats. Piper wondered how many Gemini lived down here. Hundreds, maybe thousands. She thought she heard her own heartbeat echoing through the corridors, getting louder and louder the deeper they went. Then she realized the persistent boom, ba-boom was all around them, resonating through the stone and the air.
"I wake,"
a woman's voice, as clear as Piper's singing. Annabeth froze.
"Oh, that's not good."
"It's like Tartarus," Percy said, his voice edgy.
"You remember? His heartbeat. When he appeared."
"Don't,"
Annabeth said.
"Just don't."
"Sorry." In the light of his sword, Percy's face was like a large firefly, a hovering, momentary smudge of brightness in the dark. The voice of Gia spoke again, louder.
"At last!"
Piper's singing wavered. Fear washed over her, as it had in the Spartan temple. But the gods Phobos and Deimos were old friends to her now. She let the fear burn inside her like fuel, making her voice even stronger. She sang for the snake people, for her friend's safety. Why not for Gia, too? Finally, they reached the top of a steep slope, where the path ended in a curtain of green goo. Kecrops faced the demigods.
"Beyond this camouflage is the Acropolis. You must remain here. I will check that your way is clear."
"Wait!"
Piper turned to address the crowd of Gemini.
"There is only death above. You will be safer in the tunnels. Hurry back. Forget you saw us. Protect yourselves."
The fear in her voice channeled perfectly with the charm speak. The snake people, even the guards, turned and slithered into the darkness, leaving only the king.
"Kecrops," Piper said. "You're planning to betray us as soon as you step through that goo."
"Yes," he agreed. "I will alert the giants. They will destroy you."
Then he hissed.
"Why did I tell you that?"
"Listen to the heartbeat of Gia," Piper urged. "You can sense her rage, can't you?"
Kecrops wavered. The end of his staff glowed dimly.
"I can, yes. She is angry."
"She'll destroy everything," Piper said. "She'll reduce the Acropolis to a smoking crater. Athens, your city, will be utterly destroyed, your people along with it. You believe me, don't you?"
I do."
"Whatever hatred you have for humans, for demigods, for Athena, we are the only chance to stop Gia. So you will not betray us. For your own sake and your people, you will scout the territory and make sure the way is clear.
You will say nothing to the giants. Then you will return. That is what I'll do.
Keycrops disappeared through the membrane of goo. Annabeth shook her head in amazement.
Piper, that was incredible.
We'll see if it works. Piper sat down on the cool stone floor. She figured she might as well rest while she could. The others squatted next to her. Percy handed her a canteen of water. Until she took a drink, Piper hadn't realized how dry her throat was.
Thanks.
Percy nodded.
You think the charm will last?
I'm not sure, she admitted. If Keycrops comes back in 2 minutes with an army of giants, then no.
The heartbeat of Gia echoed through the floor. Strangely, it made Piper think of the sea, how the waves boomed along the cliffs of Santa Monica back home. She wondered what her father was doing right now. It would be the middle of the night in California. Maybe he was asleep, or doing a late-night TV interview. Piper hoped he was in his favorite spot, the porch off the living room, watching the moon over the Pacific, enjoying some quiet time. Piper wanted to think he was happy and content right now, in case they failed. She thought about her friends in the Aphrodite cabin at Camp Half-Blood. She thought about her cousins in Oklahoma, which was odd, since she'd never spent much time with them. She didn't even know them very well. Now she was sorry about that. She wished she'd taken more advantage of her life, appreciated things more. She would always be grateful for her family aboard the Argo II, but she had so many other friends and relatives she wished she could see one last time.
Do you guys ever think about your families? She asked.
It was a silly question, especially on the cusp of a battle. Piper should have been focused on their quest, not distracting her friends. But they didn't chide her. Percy's gaze became unfocused. His lower lip quivered.
My mom, I haven't even seen her since Hera made me disappear. I called her from Alaska. I gave Coach Hedge some letters to deliver to her.
His voice broke.
She's all I've got. Her and my stepdad, Paul.
And Tyson, Annabeth reminded him. And Grover. And...
Yeah, of course, Percy said. Thanks. I feel much better.
Piper probably shouldn't have laughed, but she was too full of nervousness and melancholy to hold it in.
What about you, Annabeth?
My dad. My stepmom and stepbrothers.
She turned the dragon bone blade in her lap.
After all I've been through in the past year, it seems stupid that I resented them for so long. And my dad's relatives. I haven't thought about them in years. I have an uncle and cousin in Boston.
Percy looked shocked.
You? With the Yankees cap? You've got family in Red Sox country?
Annabeth smiled weakly.
I never see them. My dad and my uncle don't get along. Some old rivalry, I don't know. It's stupid what keeps people apart.
Piper nodded. She wished she had the healing powers of Asclepius. She wished she could look at people and see what was hurting them, then whip out her prescription pad and make everything better. But she guessed there was a reason Zeus kept Asclepius locked away in his underground temple. Some pain shouldn't be wished away so easily. It had to be dealt with, even embraced. Without the agony of the last few months, Piper never would have found her best friends, Hazel and Annabeth. She never would have discovered her own courage. She certainly wouldn't have had the guts to sing show tunes to the snake people under Athens. At the top of the tunnel, the green membrane rippled. Piper grabbed her sword and rose, prepared for a flood of monsters. But Keycrops emerged alone.
The way is clear, he said. But hurry. The ceremony is almost complete.
Pushing through a curtain of mucus was almost as fun as Piper imagined. She emerged, feeling like she'd just rolled through a giant's nostril. Fortunately, none of the gunk stuck to her. But still, her skin tingled with revulsion. Percy, Annabeth, and she found themselves in a cool, damp pit that seemed to be the basement level of a temple. All around them, uneven ground stretched into darkness under a low ceiling of stone. Directly above their heads, a rectangular gap was open to the sky. Piper could see the edges of walls and the tops of columns, but no monsters. Yet. The camouflage membrane had closed behind them and blended into the ground. Piper pressed her hand against it. The area seemed to be solid rock. They wouldn't be leaving the way they'd come. Annabeth ran her hand along some marks on the ground, a jagged crow's foot shape as long as a human body. The area was lumpy and white, like stone scar tissue.
"This is the place," she said. "Percy, these are the trident marks of Poseidon."
Hesitantly, Percy touched the scars. He must have been using his extra-extra-large trident.
"This is where he struck the earth," Annabeth said. "Where he made a saltwater spring appear when he had the contest with my mom to sponsor Athens."
"So this is where the rivalry started," Percy said.
"Yeah."
Percy pulled Annabeth close and kissed her. Long enough for it to get really awkward for Piper, though she said nothing. She thought about the old rule of Aphrodite's cabin, that to be recognized as a daughter of the love goddess, you had to break someone's heart. Piper had long ago decided to change that rule. Percy and Annabeth were a perfect example of why. You should have to make someone's heart whole. That was a much better test. When Percy pulled away, Annabeth looked like a fish gasping for air. "The rivalry ends here," Percy said. "I love you, wise girl." Annabeth made a little sigh, like something in her ribcage had melted. Percy glanced at Piper. "Sorry, I had to do that." Piper grinned. "How could a daughter of Aphrodite not approve? You're a great boyfriend." Annabeth made another grunt whimper.
Anyway... "We're beneath the Erechtheion. It's a temple to both Athena and Poseidon. The Parthenon should be catty-corner to the southeast. We'll need to sneak around the perimeter and disable as many siege weapons as we can. Make an approach path for the Argo II."
"It's broad daylight," Piper said. "How will we go unnoticed?" Annabeth scanned the sky.
"That's why I made a plan with Frank and Hazel. Hopefully, look.
A bee zipped overhead. Dozens more followed. They swarmed around a column, then hovered over the opening of the pit.
"Say hi to Frank, everybody," Annabeth said.
Piper waved. The cloud of bees zipped away.
"How does that even work?" Percy said. "Like, one bee is a finger? Two bees are his eyes?"
"I don't know," Annabeth admitted. "But he's our go-between. As soon as he gives Hazel the word, she will..."
"Gah!"
Percy yelped. Annabeth clamped her hand over his mouth, which looked strange because suddenly each of them had turned into a hulking, six-armed Earthborn.
"Hazel's missed."
Piper's voice sounded deep and gravelly. She looked down and realized that she, too, now had a lovely Neanderthal body. Belly hair, loincloth, stubby legs, and oversized feet. If she concentrated, she could see her normal arms. But when she moved them, they rippled like mirages, separating into three different sets of muscular Earthborn arms. Percy grimaced, which looked even worse on his newly uglified face.
"Wow, Annabeth, I'm really glad I kissed you before you changed.
Thanks a lot, she said. We should get going. I'll move clockwise around the perimeter. Piper, you move counterclockwise. Percy, you scout the middle.
Wait, Percy said.
We're walking right into the whole blood-spilling sacrifice trap we've been warned about. And you want to split up even more?
We'll cover more ground that way, Annabeth said.
We have to hurry. That chanting.
Piper hadn't noticed it until then, but now she heard it. An ominous drone in the distance, like 100 forklifts idling. She looked at the ground and noticed bits of gravel trembling, skittering southeast, as if pulled toward the Parthenon.
Right, Piper said. We'll meet up at the Giant's Throne.
At first it was easy. Monsters were everywhere. Hundreds of ogres, earthborn, and cyclopes milling through the ruins. But most of them were gathered at the Parthenon, watching the ceremony in progress. Piper strolled along the cliffs of the Acropolis unchallenged. Near the first onager, three earthborn were sunning themselves on the rocks. Piper walked right up to them and smiled.
Hello!
Before they could make a sound, she cut them down with her sword. All three melted into slag heaps. She slashed the onager's spring cord to disable the weapon, then kept moving. She was committed now. She had to do as much damage as possible before the sabotage was discovered. She skirted a patrol of cyclopes. The second onager was surrounded by an encampment of tattooed Laestrygonian ogres, but Piper managed to get to the machine without raising suspicion. She dropped a vial of Greek fire in the sling. With luck, as soon as they tried to load the catapult, it would explode in their faces. She kept moving. Griffins roosted on the colonnade of an old temple. A group of Impusai had retreated into a shadowy archway and appeared to be slumbering, their fiery hair flickering dimly, their brass legs glinting. Hopefully, the sunlight would make them sluggish if they had to fight. Whenever she could, Piper slew isolated monsters. She walked past larger groups. Meanwhile, the crowd at the Parthenon grew larger. The chanting got louder. Piper couldn't see what was happening inside the ruins. Just the heads of 20 or 30 giants standing in a circle, mumbling and swaying, maybe doing the evil monster version of Kumbaya. She disabled a third siege weapon by sawing through the torsion ropes, which should give the Argo II a clear approach from the north. She hoped Frank was watching her progress. She wondered how long it would take for the ship to arrive. Suddenly, the chanting stopped. A boom echoed across the hillside. In the Parthenon, the giants roared in triumph. All around Piper, monsters surged toward the sound of celebration. That couldn't be good. Piper blended into a crowd of sour-smelling earthborn. She bounded up the main steps of the temple, then climbed a section of metal scaffolding so she could see above the heads of the ogres and cyclopes. The scene in the ruins almost made her cry aloud. Before Porphyrion's throne, dozens of giants stood in a loose ring, hollering and shaking their weapons as two of their number paraded around the circle, showing off their prizes. The Princess Paraboya held Annabeth by the neck like a feral cat. The giant Enceladus had Percy wrapped in his massive fist. Annabeth and Percy both struggled helplessly. Their captors displayed them to the cheering horde of monsters, then turned to face King Porphyrion, who sat in his makeshift throne, his white eyes gleaming with malice.
Right on time, the giant king bellowed. The blood of Olympus to raise the Earth Mother.
Chapter 43. Piper. Piper watched in horror as the giant king rose to his full height, almost as tall as the temple columns. His face looked just as Piper remembered. Green as bile,
with a twisted sneer, his seaweed-colored hair braided with swords and axes taken from dead demigods. He loomed over the captives, watching them wriggle.
"They arrived just as you foresaw, Enceladus. Well done."
Piper's old enemy bowed his head, braided bones clattering in his dreadlocks.
"It was simple, my king."
The flame designs gleamed on his armor. His spear burned with purplish fire. He only needed one hand to hold his captive. Despite all of Percy Jackson's power, despite everything he had survived, in the end he was helpless against the sheer strength of the giant and the inevitability of the prophecy.
"I knew these two would lead the assault," Enceladus continued. "I understand how they think. Athena and Poseidon, they were just like these children. They both came here thinking to claim this city. Their arrogance has undone them."
Over the roar of the crowd, Piper could barely hear herself think. But she replayed Enceladus's words. These two would lead the assault. Her heart raced. The giants had expected Percy and Annabeth. They didn't expect her. For once, being Piper McLean, the daughter of Aphrodite, the one nobody took seriously, might play to her advantage. Annabeth tried to say something, but the giantess Paraboya shook her by the neck.
"Shut up! None of your silver-tongued trickery!"
The princess drew a hunting knife as long as Piper's sword.
"Let me do the honors, father!"
"Wait, daughter."
The king stepped back.
"The sacrifice must be done properly. Thune, destroyer of the fates, come forward."
The wizened gray giant shuffled into sight, holding an oversized meat cleaver. He fixed his milky eyes on Annabeth. Percy shouted. At the other end of the Acropolis, 100 yards away, a geyser of water shot into the sky. King Porphyrion laughed.
"You'll have to do better than that, son of Poseidon. The earth is too powerful here. Even your father wouldn't be able to summon more than a salty spring. But never fear. The only liquid we require from you is your blood."
Piper scanned the sky desperately. Where was the Argo II? Thune knelt and touched the blade of his cleaver reverently against the earth.
"Mother Gia."
His voice was impossibly deep, shaking the ruins, making the metal scaffold resonate under Piper's feet.
"In ancient times, blood mixed with your soil to create life. Now, let the blood of these demigods return the favor. We bring you to full wakefulness. We greet you as our eternal mistress."
Without thinking, Piper leaped from the scaffolding. She sailed over the heads of the cyclopes and ogres, landed in the center of the courtyard, and pushed her way into the circle of the giants. As Thune rose to use his cleaver, Piper slashed upward with her sword. She took off Thune's hand at the wrist. The old giant wailed. The cleaver and severed hand lay in the dust at Piper's feet. She felt her mist disguise burn away until she was just Piper again. One girl in the midst of an army of giants. Her jagged bronze blade like a toothpick compared to their massive weapons.
"What is this?"
Porphyrion thundered.
"How dare this weak, useless creature interrupt?"
Piper followed her gut. She attacked. Piper's advantages. She was small, she was quick, and she was absolutely insane. She drew her knife Catoptris and threw it at Enceladus, hoping she wouldn't hit Percy by accident. She veered aside without witnessing the results, but judging from the giant's painful howl, she'd aimed well. Several giants ran at her at once,
Piper dodged between their legs and let them bash their heads together. She wove through the crowd, jabbing her sword into dragon scale feet at every opportunity and yelling, "Run! Run away!" to sow confusion.
"No! Stop her!"
Porphyrion shouted.
"Kill her!"
A spear almost impaled her. Piper swerved and kept running.
"It's just like Capture the Flag," she told herself. "Only the enemy team is all 30 feet tall."
A huge sword sliced across her path. Compared to her sparring practice with Hazel, the strike was ridiculously slow. Piper leaped over the blade and zigzagged toward Annabeth, who was still kicking and writhing in Paraboya's grip. Piper had to free her friend. Unfortunately, the giantess seemed to anticipate her plan.
"I think not, demigod!" Paraboya yelled. "This one bleeds!"
The giantess raised her knife. Piper screamed in charmspeak, "Miss!" At the same time, Annabeth kicked up with her legs to make herself a smaller target. Paraboya's knife passed beneath Annabeth's legs and stabbed the giantess's own palm.
"Ow!"
Paraboya dropped Annabeth, alive, but not unscathed. The dagger had sliced a nasty gash across the back of her thigh. As Annabeth rolled away, her blood soaked into the earth.
"The blood of Olympus," Piper thought with dread.
But she couldn't do anything about that. She had to help Annabeth. Piper lunged at the giantess. Her jagged blade suddenly felt ice cold in her hands. The surprised giantess glanced down as the sword of the Boread pierced her gut. Frost spread across her bronze breastplate. Piper yanked out her sword. The giantess toppled backward, steaming white and frozen solid. Paraboya hit the ground with a thud.
"My daughter!"
King Porphyrion leveled his spear and charged, but Percy had other ideas. Enceladus had dropped him, probably because the giant was busy staggering around with Piper's knife embedded in his forehead, ichor streaming into his eyes. Percy had no weapon. Perhaps his sword had been confiscated or lost in the fighting, but he didn't let that stop him. As the giant king ran toward Piper, Percy grabbed the tip of Porphyrion's spear and forced it down into the ground. The giant's own momentum lifted him off his feet in an unintentional pole vault maneuver, and he flipped over on his back. Meanwhile, Annabeth dragged herself across the dirt. Piper ran to her side. She stood over her friend, sweeping her blade back and forth to keep the giants at bay. Cold blue steam now wreathed her blade.
"Who wants to be the next popsicle?" she yelled,
channeling anger into her charmspeak.
"Who wants to go back to Tartarus?"
That seemed to hit a nerve. The giants shuffled uneasily, glancing at the frozen body of Paraboya. And why shouldn't Piper intimidate them? Aphrodite was the most ancient Olympian, born of the sea and the blood of Uranos. She was older than Poseidon or Athena, or even Zeus, and Piper was her daughter. More than that, she was a MacLean. Her father had come from nothing. Now he was known all over the world. The MacLeans didn't retreat. Like all Cherokee, they knew how to endure suffering, keep their pride, and when necessary, fight back. This was the time to fight back. 40 feet away, Percy bent over the giant king, trying to yank a sword from the braids of his hair, but Porphyrion wasn't as stunned as he let on.
"Fools!"
Porphyrion backhanded Percy like a pesky fly. The son of Poseidon flew into a column with a sickening crunch. Porphyrion rose.
"These demigods cannot kill us! They do not have the help of the gods. Remember who you are!"
The giants closed in. A dozen spears were pointed at Piper's chest. Annabeth struggled to her feet. She retrieved Paraboya's hunting knife, but she could barely stand upright, much less fight. Each time a drop of her blood hit the ground, it bubbled, turning from red to gold. Percy tried to stand, but he was obviously dazed. He wouldn't be able to defend himself. Piper's only choice was to keep the giants focused on her. "Come on, then," she yelled. "I'll destroy you all myself if I have to." A metallic smell of storm filled the air. All the hairs on Piper's arms stood up. "The thing is," said a voice from above, "you don't have to." Piper's heart could have floated out of her body. At the top of the nearest colonnade stood Jason, his sword gleaming gold in the sun. Frank stood at his side, his bow ready. Hazel sat astride Orion, who reared and whinnied in challenge. With a deafening blast, a white-hot bolt arced from the sky, straight through Jason's body as he leaped, wreathed in lightning, at the giant king. Chapter 44. Piper. For the next 3 minutes, life was great. So much happened at once that only an ADHD demigod could have kept track. Jason fell on King Porphyrion with such force that the giant crumpled to his knees, blasted with lightning, and stabbed in the neck with a golden gladius. Frank unleashed a hail of arrows, driving back the giants nearest to Percy. The Argo II rose above the ruins, and all the ballistae and catapults fired simultaneously. Leo must have programmed the weapons with surgical precision. A wall of Greek fire roared upward all around the Parthenon. It didn't touch the interior, but in a flash, most of the smaller monsters around it were incinerated. Leo's voice boomed over the loudspeaker. "Surrender! You are surrounded by one spanking hot war machine!" The giant Enceladus howled in outrage. "Valdez!" "What's up, Enceladus?" Leo's voice roared back. "Nice dagger in your forehead."
"Gah!"
The giant pulled Catoptris out of his head.
"Monsters! Destroy that ship!"
The remaining forces tried their best. A flock of griffins rose to attack. Festus the figurehead blew flames and char-broiled them out of the sky. A few earthborn launched a volley of rocks, but from the sides of the hall, a dozen Archimedes spheres sprayed out, intercepting the boulders and blasting them to dust.
"Put some clothes on," Buford ordered.
Hazel spurred Orion off the colonnade, and they leaped into battle. The 40-foot fall would have broken any other horse's legs, but Orion hit the ground running. Hazel zipped from giant to giant, stinging them with the blade of her spatha. With extremely bad timing, Kecrops and his snake people chose that moment to join the fight. In four or five places around the ruins, the ground turned to green goo, and armed Gemini burst forth, Kecrops himself in the lead.
"Kill the demigods," he hissed. "Kill the tricksters."
Before many of his warriors could follow, Hazel pointed her blade at the nearest tunnel. The ground rumbled. All the gooey membranes popped, and the tunnels collapsed, billowing plumes of dust. Kecrops looked around at his army, now reduced to 6 guys.
"Slither away," he ordered.
Frank's arrows cut them down as they tried to retreat. The giantess Paraboya had thawed with alarming speed. She tried to grab Annabeth, but despite her bad leg, Annabeth was holding her own. She stabbed at the giantess with her own hunting knife and led her in a deadly game of tag around the throne. Percy was back on his feet, riptide once again in his hands. He still looked dazed. His nose was bleeding, but he seemed to be holding his own against the old giant Thune, who had somehow reattached his hand and found his meat cleaver. Piper stood back to back with Jason, fighting every giant who dared to come close. For a moment, she felt elated. They were actually winning. But too soon, their element of surprise faded. The giants overcame their confusion. Frank ran out of arrows. He changed into a rhinoceros and leaped into battle, but as fast as he could knock down the giants, they got up again. Their wounds seemed to be healing faster.
Annabeth lost ground against Paraboya. Hazel was knocked out of her saddle at 60 miles an hour. Jason summoned another lightning strike, but this time Porphyrion simply deflected it off the tip of his spear. The giants were bigger, stronger, and more numerous. They couldn't be killed without the help of the gods, and they didn't seem to be tiring. The six demigods were forced into a defensive ring. Another volley of earthborn rocks hit the Argo II. This time, Leo couldn't return fire fast enough. Rows of oars were sheared off. The ship shuddered and tilted in the sky. Then Enceladus threw his fiery spear. It pierced the ship's hull and exploded inside, sending spouts of fire through the oar openings. An ominous black cloud billowed from the deck. The Argo II began to sink.
"Leo!"
Jason cried. Porphyrion laughed.
"You demigods have learned nothing. There are no gods to aid you. We need only one more thing from you to make our victory complete."
The Giant King smiled expectantly. He seemed to be looking at Percy Jackson. Piper glanced over. Percy's nose was still bleeding. He seemed unaware that a trickle of blood had made its way down his face to the end of his chin.
"Percy, look out!"
Piper tried to say, but for once, her voice failed her. A single drop of blood fell from his chin. It hit the ground between his feet and sizzled like water on a frying pan. The blood of Olympus watered the ancient stones. The Acropolis groaned and shifted as the Earth Mother woke. Chapter 45. Nico. About 5 miles east of camp, a black SUV was parked on the beach. They tied up the boat at a private dock. Nico helped Dakota and Layla haul Michael Kahale ashore. The big guy was still only half conscious, mumbling what Nico assumed were football calls.
"Red 12, right 31, hike!"
Then he giggled uncontrollably.
"We'll leave him here," Layla said. "Just don't bind him. Poor guy."
"What about the car?"
Dakota asked.
"The keys are in the glove compartment. But, can you drive?"
Layla frowned.
"I thought you could drive. Aren't you 17?
"I never learned," Dakota said. "I was busy."
"I've got it covered," Nico promised.
They both looked at him.
"You're like 14, Layla said.
Nico enjoyed how nervous the Romans acted around him, even though they were older and bigger and more experienced fighters.
"I didn't say I would be behind the wheel."
He knelt and placed his hand on the ground. He felt the nearest graves, the bones of forgotten humans buried and scattered. He searched deeper, extending his senses into the underworld.
"Jules Albert, let's go."
The ground split. A zombie in a ragged 19th century motoring outfit clawed his way to the surface. Layla stepped back. Dakota screamed like a kindergartner.
"What is that, man?"
Dakota protested.
"This is my driver," Nico said. "Jules Albert finished first in the Paris-Rouen motor car race back in 1895, but he wasn't awarded the prize because his steam car used a stoker."
Layla stared at him.
"What are you even talking about?"
"He's a restless soul, always looking for another chance to drive," Nico said. "The last few years, he's been my driver whenever I needed one."
"You have a zombie chauffeur," Layla said.
"I call shotgun."
Nico got in on the passenger's side. Reluctantly, the Romans climbed in back. One thing about Jules Albert, he never got emotional. He could sit in crosstown traffic all day without losing his patience. He was immune to road rage. He could even drive straight up to an encampment of wild centaurs and navigate through them without getting nervous. The centaurs were like nothing Nico had ever seen.
They had back ends like palominos, tattoos all over their hairy arms and chests, and bullish horns protruding from their foreheads. Nico doubted they could blend in with humans as easily as Chiron did. At least 200 were sparring restlessly with swords and spears, or roasting animal carcasses over open fires. Carnivorous centaurs. The idea made Nico shudder. Their camp spilled across the farm road that meandered around Camp Half-Blood's southeast perimeter. The SUV nudged its way through, honking when necessary. Occasionally, a centaur glared through the driver's side window, saw the zombie driver, and backed away in shock.
"Pluto's pauldrons," Dakota muttered. "Even more centaurs arrived overnight." "Don't make eye contact," Layla warned. "They take that as a challenge for a duel to the death."
Nico stared straight ahead as the SUV pushed through. His heart was pounding, but he wasn't scared. He was angry. Octavian had surrounded Camp Half-Blood with monsters. Sure, Nico had mixed emotions about the camp. He'd felt rejected there, out of place, unwanted and unloved. But now that it was on the verge of destruction, he realized how much it meant to him. This was the last place Bianca and he had shared as a home, the only place they'd ever felt safe, even if only temporarily. They rounded a bend in the road and Nico's fists clenched. More monsters. Hundreds more. Dog-headed men prowled in packs, their pole axes gleaming in the light of campfires. Beyond that milled a tribe of two-headed men dressed in rags and blankets like homeless guys, armed with a haphazard collection of slings, clubs, and metal pipes.
"Octavian is an idiot," Nico hissed. "He thinks he can control these creatures?"
"They just kept showing up," Layla said. "Before we knew it, well, look."
The Legion was arrayed at the base of Half-Blood Hill, its five cohorts in perfect order, its standards bright and proud. Giant eagles circled overhead. The siege weapons, six golden onagers the size of houses, were arrayed behind in a loose semicircle, three on each flank. But for all its impressive discipline, the 12th Legion looked pitifully small, a splotch of demigod valor in a sea of ravenous monsters. Nico wished he still had the scepter of Diocletian, but he doubted a legion of dead warriors would make a dent in this army. Even the Argo II couldn't do much against this kind of strength.
"I have to disable the onagers," Nico said. "We don't have much time."
"You'll never get close to them," Layla warned. "Even if we get the entire 4th and 5th cohorts to follow us, the other cohorts will try to stop us. And those siege weapons are manned by Octavian's most loyal followers."
"We won't get close by force," Nico agreed.
"But alone, I can do it. Dakota, Layla, Jules Albert will drive you to the Legion lines. Get out, talk to your troops. Convince them to follow your lead. I'll need a distraction."
Dakota frowned.
"All right, but I'm not hurting any of my fellow legionnaires."
"No one's asking you to," Nico growled. "But if we don't stop this war, the entire Legion will be wiped out. You said the monster tribes take insult easily?"
"Yes," Dakota said. "I mean, for instance, you make any comment to those two-headed guys about the way they smell and..."
"Oh." He grinned. "If we started a brawl..." "By accident, of course."
"I'll be counting on you," Nico said.
Layla frowned.
"But how will you..."
"I'm going dark,"
Nico said, and he faded into the shadows. He thought he was prepared. He wasn't. Even after 3 days of rest and the wondrous healing properties of Coach Hedge's gooey brown gunk, Nico started to dissolve the moment he shadow jumped. His limbs turned to vapor. Cold seeped into his chest. Voices of spirits whispered in his ears.
"Help us. Remember us. Join us."
He hadn't realized how much he had relied on Reyna. Without her strength, he felt as weak as a newborn colt,
wobbling dangerously, ready to fall at every step.
"No," he told himself. "I am Nico D'Angelo, son of..."